Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Together and we'll get it undone someday when the world is much brighter.
Happy Earth Day, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doré.
And I'm Elaine Durbach.
Happy Earth Day, Elaine.
Thank you, Arnel, to you too.
Yeah.
And all our listeners.
And all our listeners. Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. This involves you calling us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we'll be recognizing Earth Day by exploring how humankind can harmonize with nature. And we're going to do another check-in with Reverend Billy at some point during the hour. As you know, we've been going, BAI has been going back and forth. There's a 24-hour vigil going on at the headquarters of J.P. Morgan. As many of you already know, on Naturalistic Support, we take an unconventional take on a variety of topics. And sometimes our take differs considerably from many of our fellow activists. And our take on environmentalism is no exception. There are a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people who care deeply about the environment, who are pretty angry with humans. And of course, it's easy to understand why. But from a naturalistic humanist perspective, we should never allow our concern for the environment and the challenge of anthropogenic climate change to be conflated with misanthropic ideas.
Yeah, the need to act to limit the impact of climate change and environmental degradation is indisputable. But we're in a much better position to do that if we stop human bashing and appreciate more objectively where humans fall within the spectrum of living things that behave in ways which can alter radically and sometimes even destroy the environment from which they originated. But why would our efforts to be more effective if we, I'm sorry, our efforts to be more effective would be so much more powerful if we decouple them from the misanthropic thinking so that our concern for the environment is harmonized with a faith in people.
Exactly. I mean, one reason is that misanthropic narratives make it seem as if humans doing damage is just inevitable. You know, it's kind of like telling ourselves, well, it's just what humans do. What are you going to do? Also, it rationalizes that life is invariably about competition to dominate. I mean, okay, it's true. Among humans, one group dominates another, who in turn dominates yet another, and elites dominate everyone, and everyone dominates nature. But in reality, the domination dynamic is not inevitable. Yes, it does exist in nature, and clearly it's existed in human society for thousands of years. But the domination dynamic is just one of the many survival mechanisms utilized throughout the world of living things.
Yeah, for nature in general and for humans in particular, cooperation has been every bit as essential and in many ways far more significant than the competitive domination model. When we regard the competitive domination model as if it's the only natural order of things, we're arguing against environmentalism. Standing up for nature and for our environment shouldn't be synonymous with condemning humankind. Most environmentally oriented activists characterized humanity as some kind of virus infecting the face of the earth. Well, thank God, not all of them.
Yes, not all of them.
Not all of them.
Yeah, not all of them. I should rephrase that and just say there are many environmentally oriented activists who have a misanthropic take. And, you know, I mean, Elaine, on our parent program, Equal Time for Free Thought, I was interviewing Lynn Margulis, who she's the woman who discovered biosymbiosis, how one cell started to live inside of another cell, and thus began our journey, which led to multicellular life. And she was an evolutionary biologist. She's gone now. She was also Carl Sagan's second wife. And
wow.
And we had her
She was really in on the fundamentals of...
Yeah. So she was like really way ahead of her time. I mean, the Academy rejected biosymbiosis at first, and then ultimately it came to recognize that she had led the way to the deepest understanding that we have yet about the nature of the origin of multi-cell life. But, you know, when we were talking with her, she actually said, humankind is a virus infecting the face of the earth. And that came out of her environmentalism. And I think, you know, I don't think that she is that atypical. I think that there are a lot of people who aren't seeing the other side of it, which is we are the species that are concerned with harmonizing with the rest of nature, and many of us have dedicated their lives to doing exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. And humankind has this ability to solve intractable problems, and by doing so, but doing so would be much more difficult if we view ourselves with contempt. I mean, that attitude that we're a virus.
Yeah.
I mean, that's enough to make you give up.
Yeah. But, you know, most people who are talking concerned with environmentalism aren't necessarily identifying one of the obstacles to becoming the kind of people that can harmonize with nature. One of the obstacles that we focus on is these misanthropic attitudes, which, you know, it kind of sets a very low expectation, which, you know, people will rise to whatever level of expectation is set for them. And if we set the bar that low, that we think, well, we're just doing the natural human thing, We're really missing the opportunity to set our sights much higher and to recognize that we are capable of finding the balance we need to. But, you know, like I said, on this Earth Day, I would challenge listeners to find anywhere else where people are talking about environmentalism and how we think about human nature together. And that's because this is also, as we talked about in previous shows, conceptual pushback that's nearly impossible to find elsewhere on terrestrial radio. And that's why We hope you value what we're trying to accomplish here on Naturalistic Support. And during this month of April, when WBAI is in fund drive mode, we hope that you'll step up and support us, because we are a singularly unique program on a unique radio station.
And you can sign up to be a WBAI buddy at buddy.wbai.org and specifying a monthly amount. We know that everyone's trying to stretch their dollars as much as possible, and you need to think carefully about the organizations you're willing to support. But if you've listened to even a little bit of WBAI, you understand what an oasis in the desert this is.
If
even half our listeners become BAI buddies for as little as $15 or $20 a month, our station could meet its bills and we could continue to bring you this unique program.
If you can't afford $15 or $20, you could actually type in an amount as little as $5 a month. You know, even if this program were the only one you listen to, at $5 a month, that's $1.25 a show. And we hope that that's something worth you investing $1.25 in, because it's the only $1.25 that will get you an approach to lasting personal growth and change and healthier, more satisfying relationships. If you prefer to make a one-time donation, we are happy to accept. Any contribution of $25 or more automatically makes you a voting member of WBAI. In the past, we've directed people to go to a web address that might not be working. So if you just go to wbai.org, the main page of our website, there are all kinds of links on that page for donating, and for donating as a buddy, an ongoing donation, or a one-time contribution. If you are more oriented toward doing it on the phone, you could do that. Our number is 833-WBAI-NYC. Forget the dash. WBAI-NYC. 833-WBAI-NYC. The actual numbers for that are 833-922-4692. If no one picks up, just leave a message and we'll call you back for your payment information. And for all of you super OG supporters, you can send a check or money order made out to WBAI to 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217. 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217. Donating in the name of Naturalistic Support ensures that we can continue to provide a place where we can support each other. And now we should get back to today's topic.
Yeah, well, thus far, humankind has posed a formidable threat to our planet and to other life. But considering the problem from a naturalistic humanism perspective, we should first recognize that wrecking the environment is not unique to humans. Yeah, there are several non-human species that can overexploit their environment to the point of causing starvation, collapse, or major disruption.
Yeah, one of these is reindeer, right? There's caribou on St. Matthew Island. In 1944, the U.S. Coast Guard introduced 29 reindeer to St. Matthew Island, which is in Alaska, and it had an abundant lichen population and no predators, so there's plenty for the 29 reindeer to eat. But by 1963, a mere 19 years later, that 29 reindeer had exploded in population to 6,000. They ate the lichens faster than they could regrow, and they destroyed their own food base. So by 3 years after that peak of 6,000, the population had crashed to only 42 animals, mostly in poor health, and the ecosystem had been devastated.
I suppose this is, I mean, what could happen to us and that we so much want to avoid.
Absolutely.
We could have our numbers cut by our own disasters, our own self-inflicted disasters. Hopefully, we're going to use our intelligence and our cooperative spirit to avoid this kind of catastrophe.
Right. But part of avoiding it, and this is what we're trying to do here, is understanding the problem from a lot of different perspectives. Understanding what has happened to humankind's relationship with the natural world in the context of these other species that have come up into conflict with their natural environment, I think is valuable. It tells us some informative stuff. So let's continue down this list, because we've got a small list here of similar situations.
I mean, like the deer.
Yep.
You said white-tailed deer.
White-tailed deer, red deer, uh-huh.
And then in areas where predators like wolves and cougars have been removed, the deer population can grow too large. They overbrowse young trees and the understory plants, leading to deer deserts where forests fail to regenerate. And the deer themselves then suffer from malnutrition and disease outbreaks.
Yep. And elephants. Elephants that are on enclosed reserves or on islands. Elephants can devastate woody vegetation when confined to limited areas. On islands like Mauritius. Or in fenced reserves, they might push ecosystems toward collapse by stripping bark, knocking down trees, and preventing regeneration.
You know, I've seen that, been on a kind of a safari in South Africa.
Yeah.
And when you watch the elephants in action, it's hard to imagine how nature supports them at all.
Yeah.
And yet in the right balance, it does, and it's fine, and the trees grow back at a sufficient rate to support the life.
Yeah.
It's only when these numbers are in imbalance that it causes catastrophe.
Yep. Yep. Lemmings and voles, that's another one where these are small mammals and their population boom leads to overgrazing of tundra vegetation. When the food runs short, populations collapse, and not pretty, through starvation and predation.
I think in its best forms, when the imbalance occurs and there's a shortage of food, some species will stop breeding.
Yep.
It's a less painful version than these ones where they starve and they die of disease.
Yeah. Well, you also have to be healthy to have offspring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, you know, they've seen it happen even in our environment, where if you have a terrific oak harvest one year, the number of squirrels grows enormously. And all these wonderful little squirrels are dashing around all over the place. If the following year the oaks don't produce that way, that huge population of squirrels gets skinnier and more rat-tailed and more lethargic, and you watch their numbers come down.
Yeah, yeah. Also, another category where we see this delicate relationship with nature, where non-humans can throw off that balance, is when mammals get introduced to an area that they hadn't been present before, like rabbits in Australia or goats on islands like the Galapagos or St. Helena. They can eat vegetation to the point of desertification.
And this happened in Australia all over, didn't it, where the natural predators were missing.
Yep, absolutely. And when plant resources collapse, these mammals suffer mass starvation.
Now, there's a mention here I didn't understand. Locusts?
Yep.
Are a gregarious phase of grasshoppers? I thought they were two different species.
No, no. They are, like, grasshoppers won't necessarily turn into locusts. They won't necessarily turn into swarming locusts. Swarming locusts is a particular thing, but it's a phenomenon. But, you know, it's not a different species, though. Same species,
yeah.
But different conditions will initiate a swarm. Not being an insectologist or whatever those, there's actually a name for that with an H, I think. But not knowing more than that, really, about it. But
it's a terrifying thing to see.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
I've seen them, but not in the terrifying clouds, but I know people who have been in the path, and they've seen everything stripped. By the time the swarm has passed through, there are bare twigs. They have stripped the leaves and the greenery off everything.
Right.
Of course, they themselves start to suffer.
Yeah. So when population density is high, certain grasshopper species transform into locust swarms. And these swarms, as you said, consume virtually all vegetation in their path, devastating ecosystems and agriculture. And once the food runs out, the swarm itself collapses due to starvation. So they consume their way to complete devastation. And then even in the microscopic world,
like with algae and cyanobacteria.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get those algal blooms. Oh my God, they are horrendous. I've seen that happen. Where under nutrient-rich conditions, often caused by human fertilizer runoff, algae grow explosively. They consume the dissolved oxygen when they die and decompose, creating dead zones where little else can live.
Yep.
And the comeback from that kind of devastation is very slow.
Yeah, and it essentially suffocates all the other aquatic life, including themselves. They suffocate themselves when the nutrients run out. And our final example is when, we actually kind of talked about that, when herbivores have been introduced, like the rabbits in Australia or goats on islands. Without natural predators, they multiply quickly and strip the landscapes bare. And the impact of that is soil erosion, desertification, the starvation of the very animals that caused it, along with harm to all the native species. So there are some commonalities in all of these cases.
Yeah, like the predators are absent or removed by humans or by fencing or by being on an island. They're confined with no migration options. They reproduce quickly, or they live in environments with slow plant regrowth, like the tundra or islands or arid zones.
Right. Now, I don't know if those conditions sound familiar, right? Predators are absent. Confined with no migration options, and reproducing quickly, having a population boom, while the rest of nature is, they're at a different pace, like a more natural pace for the rest of nature. So this is exactly the conditions that humankind finds itself in today. We've removed our predators. We've significantly diminished infant mortality. And at least until recently, we've had a booming population. And having populated the entire planet, we find ourselves essentially confined. There's nowhere else to go. So these are the conditions that cause many animal species to destabilize the environment they depend on. And listeners, what do you think about humanity's relationship to the environment? Are you encouraged by the progress we're making, or are you angry that there hasn't been more of it? And how about your involvement in conservation? Are you involved with it in any way? Do you feel like you can make a difference? And how do you connect with nature? Does it restore you to connect with nature? And does the environmental challenge we face feel overwhelming? Give us a call at 212-209-2877.
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons for hope. But before we get there, let's take a look at the extent of the damage. Do we have to really go into this in depth? It's so depressing.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. There are lots of reasons for hope, and we could talk about those, but it seems like it's worth it to make note of where we are at. But I don't want to depress you, Elaine. If you want, we could go right to the hopeful stuff. Here's a clip by...
I'm excited when you talk about the possibilities that come from our development, you know, from AI, from our intelligence.
Yeah.
Because there's very, very little talk about the benefits of our intelligence.
Well, here's a clip from Jane Goodall about hope.
If we lose hope, we're doomed. So my mission today, the reason I keep going age 90, is because if we lose hope, then we become apathetic, we do nothing. We don't want to bring children into a world where from the very beginning they believe everything's hopeless. We don't want to do that. We must not do that. And I believe we still have a window of time, and it's not only me, when if we get together, if we roll up our sleeves and take action, each of us doing what we feel is important, then there is hope for the future of the planet.
So, yeah.
That's a lovely one. That's so nice to hear her voice.
I know.
Saying
we lost her last year.
Yeah.
But her work lives on, and she is an inspiration to all of us, because she really reached out to primates in a way that really connects us to our roots, to what we are, and reminds us where we came from.
I think she did enormous work to expand our respect for other species and to understand that we were not the only thinking, feeling beings.
Absolutely. Our number is 212-209-2877, and we'd like to hear from you. Are at the board today, we don't have Reggie Johnson. We have Wood Jacobs, and he's one of our excellent fellow producers here at WBAI. And Roy just wanted to, if we need to cut to Reverend Billy again, because I know that we've been doing that on and off throughout the day, just let us know. Meanwhile, let's take our halfway break, and we'd like to hear from you. 212-209-2877.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on for my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
Born a poor young country boy, Mother Nature's son. All day long I'm sitting singing songs for everyone. Sit beside a mountain stream, see her waters rise. Listen to the pretty sound of music as she flies.
Back, you're listening to Naturalistic Support. We are talking about humankind harmonizing with nature today for our recognition of Earth Day. And I have on the line here, we have Elaine Durbach. Elaine, let's talk about hope, because that's what you want to talk about. So let's go to hope. Sorry, yeah. Elaine, I had you muted. Now we got you.
Okay. So, as you say, accelerating technological change challenges us to adapt to a very steep learning curve. And while the problems that technological breakthroughs solve are often apparent, those same breakthroughs will often cause new problems that are less obvious. And even when the issues with the technological breakthrough become known, society can be very slow to react effectively. And although accelerating technological change has been coming at us at a relentless pace for hundreds and possibly thousands of years, it's only in the past 150 that we've started to recognize its attendant damage. And it's only in the last 50 years or so that we've begun developing a scientific understanding of the global impact of human activity. And of course, we have many of those amongst us who are denying that.
Right. But you know what? I think we're different parts of our reading here, because I thought maybe we would cut right to hope.
Great.
Which yeah, like because that. You seem to wanted to do that. So
yeah, because you're strong on hope.
That's
what you highlight.
Okay, so if,
and I'm quite sure that a lot of people today are talking about the harm and the cause for alarm.
Yeah.
Let's hear about hope.
But in recent decades, a growing movement has sought to change humankind's damning relationship with nature. Are you with me, Elaine? We're at the bottom of 28.
Okay, we're showing the inside working here.
We'll
catch up with you.
Yeah, this is how we make the sausage. And this is a hopeful development. We've seen that humans can work together to avert an environmental crisis, because we've already done it. Why don't you tell us how?
Okay, and so January 1st, 1989, 197 countries agreed to eradicate ozone-depleting gases that had thinned out the ozone layers in the atmosphere at both the North and South Poles. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing, but yeah. They also thought that threat was a long way off.
Well, yeah, but once we noticed it, we also thought it was unsolvable. It seemed like it's just going to get worse.
And you say now the result of that agreement is that the Earth's ozone layer is actually strengthening and will be back to normal in 10 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So
it's just within a lifetime. And humans have also rescued many species from the brink of human-caused extinction. Since its passage in 1973, the Endangered Species Act has prevented the extinction of roughly 291 species.
That's pretty amazing, and I'm sure that some of that has been where, as we were saying, species can damage themselves. They can create their own downfall. And I think where it's been recognized, we've been able to protect and support them back to health.
Yeah. And, you know, none of this is to say that we don't have a climate crisis going on. None of this is to deny that there's much work to be done. But we can take that work on with a lot more confidence and effectiveness if we recognize that we've already started this journey. We're already deep into trying to address the problems. For example, animal harm reduction. You know, healthy humans who are aware of the ubiquity of animal suffering are increasingly demanding that governments require stronger animal protections.
Yeah, they're supporting the food producers that treat their animals more humanely. And there's a rapidly growing market for plant-based meat alternatives.
Yum.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Well, as a vegetarian, I think so.
I do too.
And although there are no estimates as to when it'll be achieved, an entire industry is now working to perfect lab-grown cultured meat, which will be free of hormones, antibiotics, safe from zoonotic diseases, nutritionally potent, and delicious, and without any of the horrendous suffering that current meat production can cause.
Yep.
And it's a promising future alternative to our reliance on animals as a food source, and that involves a variety of foods that will be produced through precision fermentation.
Yeah, that's another approach which has promise, and it's going to give us some very nutritious, high-protein, high-nutrient food that right now we're getting in some of the most horrifying ways. Technology will enable a variety of rich and satisfying wild animal experiences as a desirable alternative to exploitive animal zoos, where inhabitants are forced to endure deprivation, boredom, and loneliness during a lifetime of captivity. Eventually, we're going to be able to experience animals in the wild in total immersion, virtual reality. Some early attempts give us hints of what lies ahead.
I think this is stuff that it really only in recent decades that human beings have become aware that the animals that it was so wonderful to see in zoos were living horrendous lives, and to care about them and to want a different way of learning about them.
Yeah.
And as you say, videographers and animal researchers have developed robotic animals disguised to resemble members of particular animal species that are being studied, and to generate high-resolution, up-close video of a remotely controlled robotic animal released into the wild and engaging with its group. This is really weird and wonderful.
I know. It's so weird. I mean, I don't even understand how it possibly can work, because most animals don't, I mean, birds would be the exception, but most mammals, the world to them is known through the sense of smell, right? So we're sending out these robotic animals that I'm sure they don't smell like the animal that they're yeah. going to visit. And yet, just because they look like the other animals, they're made to look that way, somehow they get a pass. It's astonishing.
That is really wonderful. And the technique's been used with crocodiles and hippos, wild dogs, orangutans, langur monkeys, parrots, sea otters, sloths, meerkats, macaws, and rattlesnakes.
Yep. But
that's truly amazing.
It's amazing. So we've got these high-tech robotic animals that are giving us all of this information and imaging of animals that in situations that we would never have access to otherwise. Otherwise, it would just be invasive, or they would be captive, and they wouldn't even be behaving the way they do in the wild.
That's amazing. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, the people who've flown with flocks of birds on the kind of microlight planes. And somehow, or I think even cameras mounted sometimes on birds.
Yeah.
So that you can actually get the view.
Yeah,
the
bird's eye view.
Have.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Of what it's like to actually be there in the flock.
Yep. Our number is 212-209-2877. If you'd like to call and tell us what you think about the hopeful signs that humans can rise to the occasion and reverse the damage that we're causing and create harmony with nature, we want to hear from you. 212-209-2877. I also would like to remind our listeners that we are in fund drive mode, and we really would appreciate you supporting this show if you're not supporting it already. You could become a WBAI buddy, and you do that by going to buddy.wbai.org, specify the amount you want to have monthly contributing, and specify that you're supporting Naturalistic Support. We need you to step up for us so we can continue to be here for you.
I point out there are other technological advances that will facilitate a significant reduction in animal suffering, and I think improve conditions for all of us.
Yeah.
Like substituting motor vehicles for horses and oxen in the past century that reduced animal misery considerably.
Yeah. The motor vehicles is a good example. In the coming decades, vehicles are going to cease producing the greenhouse gases that are driving climate change, so it won't be, you know, substituting one unfortunate harm to nature with another.
It's a delicate balance, isn't it? I mean, these extraordinary new information systems, the AI systems that require huge amounts of energy to produce, to run.
Right.
On the other hand, yeah. We have these vehicles that will be little protect cleaner environments.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the energy that these AI data centers require is a concern. Even a bigger concern is the need for water.
Yeah.
Cooling. That also is in limited supply. So we are going to have to keep on innovating, and you know, we have to keep looking to technology to solve our problems with technology. And of course, it's one of those endless endless situations, because every solution brings unexpected new problems. So, but that's the human condition. That's the nature of being human, and that's the dilemma that we find ourselves in. And there's no going backwards. There's no really way out of it, unless, of course, we bomb ourselves back to the Stone Age.
Boy, that echoes a threat we were hearing. Yeah, hopefully we're not going that way.
Yep. Modern medicine is relying less and less on animal-derived medications. For example, bioengineered recombinant DNA is now replacing insulin, previously derived from the pancreas of pigs and cows.
Yeah, and today many of the vaccines are produced by using cell cultures or synthetic materials instead of relying on animal sources. Laboratory product testing and scientific research on live animals will increasingly become replaced by computer modeling. It's cheaper and faster and more accurate.
Yeah, that's big. We do a lot of laboratory testing on live animals, and our computer models are going to make all of that as antiquated as it is, and not a second too soon, because there's a lot of misery and suffering. These innovations are going to help us treat our fellow animals with the respect and the kindness they deserve as the sentient, conscious, emotive beings that we are increasingly understanding them to be.
Yeah. Hundreds of millions of humans now recognize that protecting the environment and our fellow living creatures is crucial to their best interests. And accepting our role as environmental stewards and conservators of life and intelligence is unquestionably in human self-interest. And protecting other species is in our extended self-interest.
Absolutely. And believe it or not, we are at the end of the line. Again, we ask you to support this program. Make a small monthly donation in the name of the show. You know, most of our hosts and producers are doing that. I'm doing it. Elaine has done it. And even for $5 a month, that would make a difference. Go to buddy.wbai.org, buddy.wbai.org. Pick Naturalistic Support from the pull-down menu. Or make a one-time donation. Go to our station website, wbai.org. And there's options there for you to donate. Your support means everything to us. And that looks like about all we have time for, Elaine.
It went by too fast.
Way too fast.
So much more to say.
Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's look at harmonizing with nature. I'm Arnel Doré.
And I'm Elaine Durbach.
Bye, Elaine.
Bye, Arnel.
Also, thanks to our fill-in engineer, Wood Jacobs. And remember, now's the time to register to vote or help someone else register. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at wbai.org. And at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. And stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And as always, try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.
To go, that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go? That you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. And a
but you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go, but you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot. They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.